What do you want? Statement of purpose? Should I email you? Should I put this on your action item list?
Look.
You decide your own level of involvement.
We are the Prepper Broadcasting Network.
You are now listening to the Patriot Power Hour, the newest show of the Prepper Broadcasting Network. This live episode features the situational awareness you need to practice self-reliance and independence. Introducing your hosts, Ben, the Breaker of Banksters, and Future Dan, the editor of FutureDanger.com.
Patriot Power Hour live. It's November 9th, 2021. Ben, the Breaker of Banksters. Future Dan, how you doing, sir?
Good. We got a show tonight that is going to be atypical of Patriot Power Hour.
Definitely. We're going to still hit our news blitz, as always, in the second quarter. But the rest, especially the second half, is going to be a lot more prepper-focused.
Yeah, it's going to be our personal experiences and pretty much nothing to do with current events. So we don't usually do this.
No, we don't. We focus on situational awareness and how to gear your preparedness, and in particular, how to affect and start your plan so you know what's going on. And that's why we cover current events analysis generally. But we ourselves are preppers as well as, you know, news hounds and analysts. And, you know, we try to get out there and put it to practice. So we got a couple good stories.
We've been practicing.
Exactly.
So there's a teaser for the second half.
Couple stories for you. Exactly.
Yep. And so for the first segment, we are going to touch upon quickly the cryptocurrency known as Bitcoin hitting its all-time high today at a value that I'll let you share with the audience in a moment. But real quick, because we got two other things we want to talk about in this first segment, or at least one more. So we're going to talk about the Bitcoin high today, all-time high. But I want to ask you to give our audience, from your perspective as a longtime holder of the currency, what has come and gone? What have we seen in Bitcoin history that once was now almost 11, 12 years into its existence? And what's gone? What won't you see again now that we're at this stage where it's hitting its highs? So what it hit today, Ben, and what has come and gone with Bitcoin?
The high,
68,564.
68. Yeah, it depends. Each exchange is slightly different. Three things that have changed or have come and gone. One is miner concentration in China. So used to be upwards of nearly half of all the Bitcoin miners who secure the network were in China. So how secure are they if they're in China? Guess what? It's down to less than 10% now. Mostly because China banned it, but also because it's more economical in other areas of the world. So that's come and gone. That type of uncertainty. What else?
What price floor is gone? You won't see it lower than what number again?
Hard to say, but if I had to pick one, I don't think you'll see it below 30,000 ever again.
Okay.
But, okay, you know, that's a long drop from here at 67, and it's still very volatile, and it actually was about 30,000 in July, so it's gone from 30,000 to 67,000 since July. It could crash back there again. In particular, here's kind of fleshing out my theory. If and when the stock market crashes.
Yeah.
A lot of people are going to have to sell their Bitcoin.
Cover shorts.
To cover shorts in the short term. But Apple, I think it'll CEO, be a quick bounce back.
Apple CEO Tim Cook said today he holds crypto in a diversified portfolio. A reasonable stake in it.
Yep, for sure. What else has come and gone? I think a stigma has come and gone.
Yep.
First it was just unknown, but then it was, oh, you're some sort of criminal. And now JP Morgan is offering it to their investors. So it's come a whole, very long way. I think just that kind of stigma has come and gone. I'm sure they're going to try to bring it back and try to smear it, but it's just so, it just works. You know, I'm not going to get into why it works necessarily. We've talked about it a lot before. I'm sure I'll talk a lot about it more in the future, but it works. People want it. So no matter what they throw at it, that kind of uncertainty and stigma, I think it's come and gone.
Look at everything that's come and gone. Yep. And things that are status quo today are going to be potentially gone.
Mm-hmm.
To include a little bit of news about IRS implications. So we'll talk more about that piece of the crypto story, but not much more. It's Bitcoin at its high. Could easily do something remarkable by next week. But turning topics, Ben, wanted to throw at you a way of looking at the COVID pandemic that maybe maybe others haven't. Maybe we can explore a little bit. And this is just us speculating. This is not built on deep research whatsoever. But you're so easy to fall into the left-right paradigm, Republican-Democrat, who behaves how when it comes to everything about the pandemic, from, you know, the masking, social distancing, lockdowns, business closures, through everything vaccine policy related, right? So rather than do it in what you're fond of saying is a false left-right paradigm, I suggest we do it from a more practical perspective, perhaps as a prepper who is focused on, you know, his or her community and wants to have awareness of the people they're dealing with and how perhaps they would, you know, how they could be approached or avoided
right
in a calamity, right?
That your number one ally is people and your number one threat is people. So you better know how to gauge them as best as possible, I guess, right? Knowing their background, how they may have been affected or not as affected, I guess, is what you're getting at, maybe?
How it was affected, you know, it's got to be recognized as the truth. Lots of people benefited. Lots of people did not. And I'm not talking from a health dimension, right? You know, this isn't a discussion on did you get sick or did it permanently, you know, not that. I want to look at it from a professional point of view, a career point of view, a trade point of view, an occupation point of view, what have you. And that oftentimes leads to a discussion of industries, right? So we will, you know, the way to approach it, I think, would be when you're dealing with a person, that person had an occupation or a profession. Perhaps it changed radically for the better or worse because of the pandemic. And now, who do they blame? What do they ascribe the reasons to? Real quick, we talked about this at length. This disease came out of China, and we said early on there's sort of a decision tree to blame the cause of this on, and I'll say it again, natural or man-made. If it's man-made, accidentally leaked, or is it a weapon? If it's a man-made weapon, did the Chinese government do it, or did someone else, right? And on that last tree, you still don't see a lot of, you know, most people can't get that far up the tree with the evidence, right? So different professions, maybe stereotypes about different professions, right? But I'll share one with you. Try to find a doctor today that would say this was a bioweapon, right? Probably be scared to death of losing his or her license.
Well, right, on the record versus privately might be different, though.
So I'll start off with the medical profession.
Okay. I was about to say that's like the number one.
And I think there's interesting ways like juxtaposing medical profession and, you know, another.
Okay.
What could be more opposite about the approach towards COVID? And then if you meet people who are or were employed in those industries, what might be safe to say? What might be influential to them? if you're trying to operate and deal with people, you know, transact, barter, or just protect yourselves, protect them, knowing what continues to make cohesiveness among people and not crossing barriers until you know them better. So you had time to slowly talk about these things. You know, basically reading people, what was their assumptions? And it might not be for this pandemic. It might be for what about the next time? Because certain industries, certain professions, they're impacted differently. So which of these industries or professions are adjacent to each other? They're kind of connected. Which of these professions and industries, depending on the jurisdiction, if you're running X business in California and X business in Texas, it's the same business. You're the same profession in them. Your life could have been totally different in either state.
Well, that's a great point right there in of itself is some are very strict, right? Certain professions, and I think the medical, most every hospital.
When you say strict, it's pretty much how they approached it and how they treated their employees was uniform across states.
Yeah.
Whereas, give us an example, one that was probably highly variable by location.
That could be one, let's see, as simple as government employees, I believe. You know, certain states mandated and some didn't.
State employees.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. State government. Correct. State government employees.
I was going to say, like, cashiers.
And I was going to
retail cashiers.
I was going to say bartenders and restaurants.
Kind of. Oh, big time. Yeah. The bars were shut, just absolutely wiped out in a lot of states.
Whereas something that's quote-unquote strict would be airlines. They've been on the front of the, you know, enforcing it.
Yes.
And so, not domestically, but especially internationally, but domestically as well.
They enforce the soft side, masks, social distancing, all that heavily.
Not much wiggle room there if you're in the airline industry.
Until it got to the pilots union saying no to vaccines, though. And that's an interesting dynamic, too, is which industries were sensitive to market pressure.
Yeah.
And did as little compliance with the most extreme medical tyranny that you could point to. And which industries profited by promoting, right? And then how would you treat people if you ran into them in the future, not knowing more, you know, you just met this person and, hey, what do you do? I used to be, how do you take the conversation from there?
Here's another one. Teachers.
Yep.
Is a whole different, and that also is pretty variable across the country, I think. Certain states or jurisdictions, as you noted, very, you know, heck, they didn't even have students in schools. Whereas certain areas, they never stopped going to school. So that's a very wide variability based on where you lived, I suppose. But generally, teachers also enforcing a lot of the rules or being pushed out. And that's another thing I was going to say with the medical and nurses. A lot of the good ones, and I don't even necessarily want to say good, but those who would more think for themselves are being pushed out, leaving the future workforce much more lockstep, mostly for worse, I guess, you know.
That too. You're right. The teachers and the nurses and the doctors, big, big purge of nonconformists. Yeah.
And also, you know, early retirements as well. Not just people just firing, but just like, I'm sick of this crap. I'm going to quit when I'm 55 or 60.
Certainly happened in waves.
Right.
Teachers, though, you know, when it was coming on strong, and, you know, I'll be honest, on this show, we weren't sure in February of 2020 whether we were facing a highly lethal pandemic. It turns out this was more lethal than the flu, but not terribly more lethal.
This is, in my opinion, just kind of gauging the wind of what we thought it could be, this is at the midpoint or the low point. It definitely wasn't near the high point. We were thinking, oh, like 5 to even 10% death rate potentially early on, like, you know, but then we realized that's more of a, that was more of a propaganda piece / fear.
And the but it still was deadly. That we reviewed a few weeks ago shows the charts on its relative, you know, lethality. Good book. The, what other industries had, you know, radical change? What talk to me about the insurance industry.
Yeah. So,
or did it change?
It as people that work in the industry, not that much change. You just work at home if you're a lawyer or you're an insurance adjuster. Yeah, a lot of those folks, their lives change, but maybe for the better, and or you could say not for the better, and I'm one of these, of course, much more isolated and working at home, more convenient, but also you're not getting out in the world. You can get kind of caught up in a rut, but from the industry itself, I know you want to talk about work from home, but just the insurance industry itself, there have been a lot more cyber attacks, cyber claims because of the work from home, and also just a lot more things are online than ever.
But people who are in the industry who are, you know, maybe benefited from this. Now, how are they approached by different arguments on, wait a minute, that was man-made and it was leaked from a lab, and now, you know, one could expect within 5 years it's just commonly accepted that that's true. It's just during the time when it wasn't politically, you know, convenient to admit that sort of thing. We're talking about declassified documents later when, hey, what difference does it make anymore, as Hillary Clinton said about Benghazi, right? What, how would you approach someone who had not just an insurance industry job, but a white-collar job?
Okay.
And spent all that time indoors, and immediately upon the pandemic lockdown, you know, perhaps they were spared a commute, so they loved it. What? How would you deal with those people? People such as yourself, really?
I mean,
can you classify them as anything, or do they have a common experience you got to be aware of when talking to them? I'll tell you one. It's not the people that got to stay at home. It's the people whose livelihood meant they had to keep going out.
Yeah.
They couldn't work without putting a mask on. They had to do the social distancing. They had to put up with, oh, for the period of time when it wasn't clear whether it was on surfaces, all the hand sanitizing.
Yeah.
And just the burden, right, of that experience, radically different from white-collar jobs that got to stay home online.
Definitely. Very true. That much worse experience for them overall, I would expect. And also, just overall, you know, we're talking demographics in terms of jobs, but the young folks, I mean, I feel like I've lived in the physical 3D world a lot. I'm 36 years old, so taking a year or two off quarantining and getting virtual, not devastating to my psyche or social skills, hopefully. But if I was 12 years old or 16 years old or 20 years old and this happened, it might mess me up a lot more. So,
those folks on the professions, like early 20s.
Yeah, or if you just entered into, well, the good news, kind of to wrap this segment up before we go to the break, the financial crisis of 2008 is what woke me up and got me all moving on this. So maybe kids that are, you know, just coming out of college now see all this, you know, BS, and they're waking up and they'll be fighting down the road. And maybe they're realizing that Bitcoin is hard money, or, you know, gold and silver are up a little bit. And I'm still a fan of them, but they've been lagging for sure. But hey, at least a lot more people now, and young people in particular, realize that fiat currency is a scam. Okay.
I could tell you this, the demographics that include, let's say, sole proprietor hairdressers or taekwondo masters of after school kids dojos, or those folks,
yeah,
experience on the outside, you know, coming out of this is a lot different from a,
oh yeah,
bank employee who,
exactly,
shut the drive-through terminal out of convenience that COVID made it impossible, even though the tellers who don't have a job anymore were inside the, you know, were inside the bank anyways. Didn't affect everybody equally, and treating people according to what, how they viewed it is probably a good skill to have to develop.
Good point, great point. All right, folks, we'll be right back. News Blitz, stay with us.
At the Prepper Broadcasting Network, our mission has expanded, and we have decided to use our influence to aid in disaster recovery. PBN is offering up our airwaves to nonprofits and boots-on-the-ground organizations that are affecting disaster recovery. The real people out there rebuilding lives. From organizations that reestablish the supply chain to those who deliver aid and even organizations that rebuild shattered homes and lives. The future of disaster response does not lay in the hands of some government organizations. No, it's up to us, Disaster Coffee. It only makes sense that PBN would partner with Disaster Coffee. Disaster Coffee is selling outstanding coffee that is roasted to order and shipped right to your door. A portion of their profits will be directly donated to disaster recovery organizations like Grindstone Ministries, Healthcare Ready, and Citizens Assisting Citizens. Disaster Coffee sources top quality beans that are roasted to order. You get coffee at its very best, but you also make a difference with every purchase. Disaster Coffee offers every customer the ability to join the national disaster relief effort. Get yours at disastercoffee.com.
We are the Prepper Broadcasting Network. Never, never leave.
Patriot Power Hour News Blitz, November 9th, 2021. It is episode 160. Just keep racking them up here on Prepper Broadcasting Network, PrepperBroadcasting.com. Let's get moving with the news blitz at FutureDanger.com. White House won't rule out mandating vaccine for domestic air travel, just as we were talking about on the front lines of enforcing it, the airlines. ATF obtained more than 54 million firearm owner records in 2021. Vermont government to give children condoms in middle school. Taxpayer funded. Infrastructure bill to force drunken driving surveillance in new cars. This massive infrastructure bill they're passing, putting through. All types of surveillance in these new cars are going to be mandated. As you said, Future Dan, a little while back, last episode, I believe, even, a little bit of news popping back up with China. China conducts combat readiness patrol near Taiwan as Congress members arrive via U.S. Air Force transport. China has now been deemed the largest navy in the world. Sure, not as capable as the U.S., but they have a lot of warships now. Move on to a little bit of economics. This is actually the most highly rated, most actualized articles of the entire day on the News Blitz.
Red hot.
Producer prices rise 8.6%. Matching September record high, so another month record high, just keeps burning, not transitory as they said it would be. The consumer price index in the red zone, 2.34%, much lower than that, so perhaps the producers are absorbing this price cut or cost increase for now, but that will not last forever. Gas prices also in the red zone, up a few more cents since last week. We've been watching it tick up. It's at 342
nationwide.
It was 339 last week, I think, and 337 or something like that the week before. Meatflation hits shoppers. Oh, we're going to talk all about this later in the show.
Meatflation.
Price of meat going up even more. But what would you expect? Of course it is. Ramen noodles, yeah, you can still produce that very cheap. But actual meat, that still takes a lot of energy and food.
It's like gasflation, but you eat it.
Yeah. Walmart deploying fully driverless trucks. Labor shortages and rising wages push businesses to invest in robotic automation. Meanwhile, the number of jobless claims, very low. not too many people losing their job right now, but also not so many people in the labor force. And all the big companies are pushing robotic trucks, so, or excuse me, labor force, not just trucks, all different types of jobs, robotics. So going to be very interesting to see what happens with the labor market going forward. Looking at some food shortages, I've also said food shortages are just as bad or maybe even worse than the inflation. Well, Thanksgiving dinner staples low in stock. Part of this due to truck drivers. There's 80,000 truck driver openings that are not being filled. So it's almost like a death of 1,000 cuts while there's shortages in inflation and meatflation. Meanwhile, the debt just out of control. We'll talk about household debt right now. We always talk about government, but household is just as crazy. New record, $15.24 trillion with a T last quarter. More than $15 trillion in household debt. And, of course, the national debt, nearly $30 trillion. So you put the government plus the household debt, $45 trillion. You think they're going to be able to raise interest rates? No, because you'll never be able to afford the payments. That's the death spiral we're in. And finally, the infrastructure bill would force crypto reporting. All types of transactions would be forced to be reported, which would really hamper the industry. We'll see how that affects. We'll be reporting here for sure as it develops. Finally, fourth column, whistleblower claims Pfizer's COVID vaccine safety trial contained false data. French government says people under 30 should not get Moderna COVID-19. Oh my gosh, can I speak? Moderna COVID-19 vaccine. Again, French government says people under 30 should not get the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine. Future Dan, that's the news blitz for today.
Yeah, and last I checked, no one knew where the governor of California was for 11 days. Somebody is being accused of running a satanic ritual and killing people in a crowd. And there's other.
Biden farted in front of the.
Yeah. That's not on the heat map.
No, it's not. It's
the governor of California missing for 11 days is interesting. He's an elected official. So, but still, it's, you know, whatever became in Gavin Newsom isn't dangerous. There is a lieutenant governor in California, right? Right. But the things other people talk about, we're not. Almost all of those indicators you ticked off with articles are grade green, low level danger. Not happening now, just topical news that could potentially lead to bad, bad things. This is, besides inflation, relatively mild week in the news from a danger point of view.
Which is, I suppose, good news. Get some more time to prep every week. S has not HTF. Well, that's a good. Got some more time to prep, folks. But on the other hand, a lot of the issues we've talked about in the last month, year, even, geez, 4 years or so we've done Patriot Power Hour. A lot of them have not been resolved, so they're not super active right now, but there's a lot of undercurrents. Just keep that in mind.
I think we've decided none of them have been resolved.
Pretty much.
But a lot of these dangers are just permanent dangers, right?
True.
War with major peer actors that, you know, act as adversaries. That's a permanent facet of our geopolitical system. So some of this stuff does, you know, inflation skyrocketing. That's always a potential in any economy, free or otherwise. So, you know, a lot of these are never getting resolved.
Yep.
Others, it'd be great if you never heard a single bit of news about them, but we do. We still do. So, meatflation, good word. Second half of the show, we're going to talk about your response to meatflation from a do-it-yourself perspective.
Yes, sir.
Before we do, talk to me a little bit about how bad can the inflation get?
Well, it could get pretty ugly. As we're going to talk about, I believe spending the money on preps and goods now is a not just a good idea, it's almost vital, because you may not be able to get a lot of the items you want, and or you'll just be priced out. So we're going to be going to break. We'll talk a little bit more about inflation, but specifically meatflation, and how maybe you can hedge your bets and stock some away. All right, we'll be right back. Stick with us. It's your power.
Millions of Americans are still not protected against COVID-19. And we are seeing more infections among those who are unvaccinated. I issued a Surgeon General's advisory on the dangers of health misinformation. Surgeon General advisories are reserved for urgent public health threats. The bass and the tweeters make the speakers go to war. Misinformation poses an imminent and insidious threat to our nation's health. The mighty trumpet brings the freaks out to the floor. Health misinformation is false, inaccurate, or misleading information about health. The bass and the tweeters make the speakers go to war. Misinformation takes away our freedom. The mighty trumpet brings the freaks out to the floor. Misinformation has led people to resist wearing masks. Tell me where the freaks at. What we call disinformation. Tell me where the freaks at. We need an all-of-society approach. Freaks at. Checking sources before they share. Tell me where the freaks at. If you're not sure, don't share. Today, the Rockefeller Foundation is announcing a $13.5 million commitment. This is just the beginning. We expect more from our technology companies. We get that bass thumping, people jumping all over the world. Take action against misinformation super spreaders. Got that freak flow, freak show. Welcome to the circus. Bringing individuals and organizations together. Let the leaders lead, preachers preach. Welcome to the circus. Nearly every death we are seeing now from COVID-19 could have been prevented. See, we do this for a purpose, just to keep that fire burning. Kids are depending on all of us to get vaccinated. And we don't need no water, let that mother burn. There are more and more patients with COVID-19 who never got vaccinated. Because they were misled by misinformation. Healthier information environment. There is disinformation that is coming from bad actors. Not sharing is caring. Misinformation literally costing us our loved ones. The bass and the tweeters make the speakers go to war. Technology companies have a particularly important role. The mighty trumpet brings the freaks out to the floor. Much, much more has to be done, and we can't wait. The bass and the tweeters make the speakers go to war. It's costing people their lives. The mighty trumpet brings the freaks out to the floor. Tell me where the freaks at.
Tell me where the freaks at. We are in regular touch with these social media platforms. We've increased disinformation research and tracking. We're flagging problematic posts for Facebook. So we're helping get trusted content out there. COVID community courts. The bass and the tweeters make the speakers go to war. Robust enforcement strategy. Information travels quite quickly on social media platforms. The bass and the tweeters make the speakers go to war. Information spreads too quickly. The mighty trumpet brings the freaks up to the floor. We have empowered, engaged, funded local voices to combat misinformation that's traveling online or traveling, unfortunately, out of the mouths of elected officials.
Of the Prepper Broadcasting Network.
Patriot Power Hour, episode 160, Future Dan. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, let's talk about meatflation and what you're doing about it these days, Ben. Looking at an article from investing.com, North American beef prices are soaring. Talks about Canada, United States, the types of prices people are paying. Sirloin round steaks have surged as much as 10% in the last year, and U.S. beef steaks are fetching record prices. So that's here, that's now. You can't believe that the government in power in our country or Canada is actually enabling the beef industry. It ties back to their climate agenda and limiting that and talking people to eat into eating cicadas or whatever that we saw this summer. But you decided to take a different route. What have you done in a mere matter of months about your meat procurement, and in addition to that, your skill set as a prepper and survivalist?
Yeah, well, this gentleman in this article, the director of the Agri-Food Analytics Lab, says we're in the second inning of a nine-inning game of inflation. So what's better than getting your own meat the old-fashioned way, hunting? So let's see. When did I start hunter training? About 100 days ago. So in less than 100 days, I went from, you know, I've shot firearms but never gone hunting, you know, and did all the, got the license, did all the training, all that. We went out a few times and got myself, we think is about a one-year-old buck, and got a heart shot with a crossbow. And
congratulations.
It was pretty awesome. Yeah, thank you. And it went, you know, 50 to 70 yards and fell into a stream, died right there, and gutted it, skinned it, and butchered it.
By yourself.
By myself. Believe with, it with a bunch or of YouTube, not. With a bunch of YouTube help.
Let me put this in perspective. I've been hunting longer than you, but it wasn't something that I did growing up. I decided I wanted to do it and adopted it as a sport and as a skill set, and now I'm a hunter later in life. You're doing it and beginning it later than me, and in the last 100 days, your experience has included online coursework, because it's all the COVID era.
Yeah.
Right? So what hunter safety used to be a class that you attended, maybe multiple depending on where you're from. You did it all online, click through the e-learning, and got your ticket to get a license in the entire United States for the rest of your life. Stop there. What was that experience like? Did you get much out of that?
I did, but I really feel like I'm the top 10% of people who would learn from that, insofar as I'm 36 years old, so I've done a lot of learning, e-learning in my life. I really soak up information well from PowerPoint presentations and webinars and little videos like that, I guess.
Works
like,
for you.
Yeah. Throughout all of college, you know, I studied a lot in that way, I guess you could say. So anyway, I am able to pay attention and really learn, self-learn rather than have an instructor, you know what I mean? So I feel like I was. Now, if I had someone to ask some questions or they had some interesting stories, I did miss out on that. I'm sure that the hunt, you know, you get a lesson from
except for the ones I told you.
Well, yeah, I know. I got those, but from the instructor. You're my, in a way, the instructor. So appreciate the guidance. But anyway,
but in the course,
I felt like I learned a fair amount, and it was efficient and straightforward. And I prefer that just because I was able to do it on my time over like a month period. I was able to study like 30 minutes here, 1 hour here, and just bam, 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 instead of like a whole weekend I had to dedicate or something.
So your coursework, you're right, the in-person instruction, you could stop the instructor and ask a question. There was a lot of that when I took the course.
Right.
And that was lacking.
That was missing for sure. Missing yep. for sure. But I am kind of self-motivated and more. I took it very seriously, and I wanted to learn more than just the basics for safety purposes, but also to be successful. So I did look up some things myself. You know, kind of ask Google rather than ask the instructor or whatever. But
and there's a body of ethics that come with hunting too.
Yeah.
Things that aren't necessarily
so the coursework I did really was really good, and they really were pro ethics and talked a lot about a lot of the different things, whether it's hunting on land they have permission for or understanding your local laws and looking for whether it's marked for hunt, you know, not to hunt on or not. And it clearly explained that based on the regulations, but also the ethical, you know, there's, they made a good distinction between here's the law and then here's the ethics. You know, you can still be within the law, but not ethical hunting.
Right. Taking for shots certain that things. Have right. incredibly low chance of killing the deer, but a moderate chance of wounding yeah. it and making it suffer, et cetera.
So I've been through a lot of like online training, some horrible and some really good. And this was towards the really good. So, you know, it depends on which one you get, I suppose. But I felt like they did a good job. And they had a lot of 5-minute YouTube videos of people actually out in the field and stuff. So it's kind of cool.
Right. And as we talked about before, and if you listen to our Azure Highland series this summer, we are suburban preppers. We live in an area where there's a denser population. And this was urban archery.
Yeah.
And you're making it happen in a piece of land that is in suburbia. So the deer are different there.
Yeah.
They're plentiful and probably, you know, don't face a predatory threat. So you did get a little bit of an easier
yep.
prey. Nevertheless, you succeeded. And this, believe it or not, I want to share this with the audience because this is important. You actually hunted 3 times.
True.
With the crossbow. The first time out, you saw nothing in a, you know, we're talking about a 20-acre piece of a bowl, a wooded bowl of a floodplain where you have elevated sides and fields of view, and all shots are into the bowl.
Right.
Where
very safe.
You have safe background. You're not
pointing. And no one's down there doing things like, except for us when we're dragging the deer back. But
so well, let's get to that. But you first time out, no deer were seen. Typical. That was early in September, and where you live, it's a
early October.
Early, right.
The first is actually the first like
first of October because urban archery buck opened up. Right.
Exactly.
And that makes it easier because all the deer are available rather than just antlerless. Second time out, you had an experience which included taking a shot and missing.
Yep.
Walk us through that and what you learned from it.
Well, let's say this. Each experience and the reason I was able to get a pretty easy kill on the third one was because of what I learned in previous experiences. So that first time we went is more of a scouting, you know. We scouted it out. We didn't see anything.
You were stalking. Oh, you were hunting.
For sure. But we
just didn't see any deer.
Exactly.
That happens a lot, yep. right? Especially stalking with archery, hard to do.
Yep. But in that, we stayed in a limited area on that first time. And the second time we said, why don't we go to this other area kind of across?
And you got there.
And I went down there and we had radios, little walkie-talkies. And you had spotted one that I had actually just walked by where they were, and I went down. And
I can't believe it.
10 minutes later, they
you were just there.
Exactly.
You were, and then when I called you, you came right out of the woods back up yep. to an opening. And the doe that I said was there, sure enough, she was there. What'd yep. you do?
I lined it up, took the shot, and whiffed. Now, a couple reasons why. First, it wasn't broadside, and thinking about it now, it wasn't the greatest shot. I really wanted to get a shot, but if I'd been a little more patient.
First time ever.
Yeah.
Taking a shot at live game. Second time ever hunting, weeks after finishing hunter safety, and you get the fever, you got the target.
Yep.
And how'd you miss?
To be honest, just I had not had enough experience with the crossbow, so I had just assumed, making an ass out of you and me, as they say, assumed that there would be some drop on the bolt at like 50 yards.
But the shot you had was uphill, and the doe was standing on a bank higher than you.
Yep.
And you shot over it.
Exactly. So I didn't take that elevation into account. And also, there really, after further practice, which was huge difference between the second and the third one where I was successful, but practiced a lot, I learned there really isn't that much. You know, that crossbow is not a Nerf crossbow. It shoots fast, powerful, and at 50 yards or less, it's practically straight. So I didn't need to adjust for it. Plus, as you said, the different elevation might have thrown me off. But in, long story short, after that miss, I remember you were saying, oh, you're going to remember that one. That's going to grind at you. And it wasn't too bad, but I was thinking about it, and it motivated me. Take some more practice shots beforehand, which I should have done. I'd shot the crossbow, I guess, only one time before. I had familiarized myself with the safety and all that stuff before, but I hadn't taken many practice shots at all. So took maybe 20 to 30 practice shots and practice loading it and all that. And then a couple days later, we went out on that third expedition. And
so you were coming along the high ground.
Yep.
And walk us through what the hunt was like.
So it was beautiful morning, crisp, you know, early November morning.
Last Friday.
The sun was just coming up. We timed it perfectly, walking on this elevated area and creeping along slowly. I see out in the distance, not only you acting as a spotter on the other side of the field, on my left side, but then to the right, in elevated or you know below elevation, maybe 15 feet below and 40 yards distant were two deer. I had a little less, what do they call it, buck fever this go around.
Yeah,
but I really did focus on what seemed like the bigger and closer one almost immediately. So I didn't see really that second one as well. I knew there were two. I don't think there were any more than that. But the one that was closest to me, and he was also the biggest one, it seemed, he was lined up perfectly. He saw me just as I was bringing up the crossbow to my shoulder. He saw me, but he wasn't really scared. You know, suburban deer. And he's pretty young. Maybe just inexperienced. It was early in the morning. I think we surprised him as much as anything, too, by the way, because we later saw that he was probably sleeping right there.
And you took a textbook shot. It was behind the front leg. It went through both lungs, took the heart. This deer ran maybe 70 yards, like you said earlier. After you took the shot, and I saw you took the shot and heard the crossbow discharge, a big thwack.
Yeah.
I came down to your position, and I saw that deer run, and I knew you hit him because he ran right into a tree. He just went right into like a forked, bushy kind of tree. Not something that, you know, a deer would make a mistake and not miss it. You know, they're really good at
avoiding brush. Right.
He was obviously hit. And then we went and found the deer. Tell us about that process.
So actually, we overlooked him the first kind of pass around. I did find a blood trail. So number one, we found where he hit that tree. Walked another 20 yards, found some leaves with some very apparent blood gushed out everywhere. But then we couldn't find it. Kind of did some circles looking around. Little did I know what looked like maybe a big stone in the creek was the buck. He was face down, completely submerged, but his butt was kind of hanging out of the water. Ice cold, so it preserved him perfectly after we had got him. So we dragged him. We actually, this was during a work day. I had to go tell my boss, but I was like, oh, crap, I got to get home and get to some conference calls and do some stuff. So
right.
We actually
hung it.
And came back a few hours later.
Came on back. Now, at this point, your hunting buddy had to go do other things. I had commitments. Yep.
So it's all me now.
And I want to tell this audience, the big differentiator, you know, this is not experiential learning. This is do-it-yourself learning. You went on YouTube, found a couple videos on how to gut deer and how to move them, you know, out of the woods the right way when you're doing it alone. And you brought it home and processed this deer.
Yep.
All by watching videos and applying the knowledge through that medium. Probably first human in history that got a deer on his third hunt and did all the rest of it with solo.
Based on YouTube. Hey, I'm a millennial. I can do all types of stuff.
It was successful. YouTube. So the takeaway of Ben's first deer hunting success story is if you're out there, you're suburban, you've never hunted in your life, you weren't raised in the tradition, but if this story is inspiring, it can be done. There's a lot of beginner's luck built into this. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you what, taking the time to get comfortable with your weapon and know where how to hit targets with it and how the sights work immediately paid off. Then a good dose of luck. However, we knew deer were there. We went to where we knew they were.
We made our own luck in a way, too.
You sure did. And so congratulations on that. I know it was a transformative event in your journey of becoming prepared.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, I love my dad. He did a lot of great things for me, but I do wish he had done that. You know, when I was like 12 or 14, gone out, taken one down and done all this. It's been like a rite of passage. But whatever, you know. I feel a little more manly now. And got more than 30 pounds of meat, and that's with the bone out. More than 30 pounds of really high. Oh, it's so good too.
So as really a replacement high quality for beef, meat. Let's just take beef as the exchange. The meatflation out there.
Exactly.
You brought into your family income, really. You know, $60-$70 worth of meat.
Oh, more than that. But long story short, every dollar I invested into the license, into the training, and even into some other aspects, been paid back more than double.
Yep.
So, and I still have more deer I can get later this year. So, you know, I'm all about this. And I got my freezer's totally full right now.
So I've been making prepper moves too.
Yeah, go for it. You finish it off. We only got about 4 minutes left. I want to hear all about your prepper moves to cap it off.
Yeah, so a grocery store near me is going out of business. Not for any reason other than a nearby grocery store of the same chain, you know, has the same business and is a better store, just does better business. So they closed down one. There's ample competition of grocery stores. It's not like it's the only one in town. So this one was shutting down, and it was 50% off on everything except fresh meats. However, frozen fish were 50% off. I cruised into that store the night before last with the intent of seeing what I might get at 50% off to improve my food stocks. And the food that I decided to come out there with, canned goods, I did two grocery shopping carts loaded, and put in an $800 purchase on previous prices of food. Now, this is suburbia. Prices are a little bit higher. Take that into effect. But I came out of there loaded for at least an 8 month supply for my family that I didn't have before. But it goes to show, if you have cash on hand when these opportunities arise and you seize the initiative. I went in there to the soup and canned goods aisle and loaded a cart and at 50% off, right? With meatflation, with food shortages, with food inflation, it was a no-brainer. Time to spend this money now and stock up. And what I'm going to do for the first time, my journey as a prepper, is bring everything in my home stock for food out into a common area. I'm going to assess what I got, count it, take some pictures, do some inventory, take a look at some of the expiration and Best Buy dates. So that I could implement for the first time in my history. I have not done this. And I know it's the right way to do business when you're a prepper. Rotate the stocks and have a plan. Have a meal plan with recipes. It's high time. And, by the way, I'm keeping my eye open for more of these deals because I don't think I stocked enough up. This store is pretty much tapped. Not a lot left. You know what was left, though? I want to share this with you. You know what was still left in that store? No problem.
What?
Holiday cards and gift cards were plentiful.
Okay.
But also anything plant-based meat replacement. Oh. Freezer was full. So if you're inclined to wait till the last minute to prep and you like fake meat, you'll probably still be able to find it when it all comes crashing down. But a lot of those shelves, since I guess that sale went on since last Wednesday.
Okay.
And this is now the next Tuesday, and it's not a lot left in there. And I asked the cashier on my way out, when does sale start? And he said, last Wednesday. And I said, have you seen anybody do two carts worth $800 worth of food since last Wednesday? Because I like to ask those questions of clerks and cashiers just to, when gas prices start getting high, or gas stations start running out of gas, or, you know, other local indicators that the supply situation is more disrupted than I feel comfortable with. But in this case, I was asking, how many other people really in our area are prepping? You know what he told me?
Good point.
So one other lady came in and did the same thing I did. It's the only, now he's just one cashier.
Right.
So he's not working there all the time since last Wednesday. So if one cashier saw one other person do what I did, probably four or five in my area seized the initiative and did this. Let me just say, I was in the soup aisle, and it was like looting practice, because I was scooping cans off of that shelf as fast as I could. And the attention I gathered from my fellow citizens was, shall we say, I'm not the normal one in the store. But at the moment, with 50% off, I wasn't worried about it.
Awesome, man. Good stuff. Hey, man, always room for improvement in your prepping repertoire. So both of us making some moves.
Food preps.
Need a new project. I'm going to come up with a couple new projects. We'll keep sharing our journey. Till then, guys, we're out of here. Make way for Next Generation Show. It's been the Patriot Power Hour, episode 160.
Good show.
Great show. Catch you later, man.